We're holding on Lamed Tes Amud Beis, the second line of the wide lines. Going back now to matters of Bikur Cholim, where we brought the pasuk from the story of Korach that hints at the obligation for Bikur Cholim, and that led us into a digression about certain drashas relating to the story of Korach. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, Bikur Cholim ein lashir. There's no shear, there's no measure for the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So what does that mean? My aim was sheer. So Rabbi Yosef thought to say, in sheer lamatan schara, that the Braise is telling you there's no limit to the schar, to the reward that a person gets from Hashem for doing this mitzvah. Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, v'chol mitzvahs miya sheer lamatan schara. So what would that imply? Other mitzvahs, there is a sheer, there is a limit for their schar. V'hatnan, we learn in Pirkei Avos, have a zohar mitzvah kala k'machamora. Be careful with a seemingly minor or easy mitzvah, just like with a stricter or bigger one. Because you don't know what the schar of mitzvahs is, so it might be that something that you think is an easy small mitzvah actually has a greater schar. So that means that there can be other mitzvahs that have no limit to their reward. Rather, Abaya says, when the braisa means there's no shear, means not in terms of the reward, but in terms of what you have to do to fulfill it. Afilu gadol eitz, or not what you have to do, that's the next one really, but in terms of that there's no limit in terms of who visits who. Afilu gadol eitz o katan, even a great person has to visit a lesser person, even though it would be a lack of covered for him. But Ein Lo Shir, we're saying he's still required to. We find, for example, the paradigm, of course, of that is that Hashem visits Avraham Avinu, even though Hashem, the Borei, is infinitely greater than the Nivra, but that shows, that establishes the precedent that even a greater one should visit a lesser one. Rava says another meaning of the Braisa is, Afilu Me'a Pamim Bayoim, means you visit the person, even if necessary, 100 times in a day, there's no limit to the number of times, so the shear would be the number of times that you do the mitzvah. There's no limit to it. Now, of course, you do have to know when you want it and when you're not wanted, and the Rambam mentions that in Hilchas Ovol, where he has at the end of there the halachas of Bikur Cholim, largely based on our Gemara. So he mentions that a person has to know when he's not wanted, when there comes the point that he's being matriach on the sick person, and then tell him before Shlomo or something to that effect, and leave. There's actually a cute thing from the Chassam Sofer. He says, we talked yesterday that in Yisro's advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, when he says to him, that the word Yel Chuva, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, refers to Bikur Cholim. So why of all things is that called by the words Yel Chuva, that they will go in it? He says, because it's also a hint for when you're doing Bikur Cholim, sometimes the best part of the Bikur Cholim is the Yel Chuva when you leave. Because you have to know when to leave, when already you're more trouble for the Chola than you're worth. Okay. Another thing, Omer of Achaba Chanina, Kolam of Vakar Chola, anybody who visits a sick person, Notel Echad Mishishim Betzarei, he takes away 1/60th, morning, he takes away 1/60th of the Chola's pain, bottom of Lama Tesma Bay is morning. So now some Mephoshim learn that it means he takes it away as in it's gone and nobody is suffering from it anymore. Others say that it means that he actually takes, and there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that seems to bear this out, that says that it means that actually the visitor himself takes that 1/60th on himself. So now he himself, according to that, he himself is now getting a little bit of the sickness. Nevertheless, he's still expected to visit as much as possible. Anyway, so 1/60th. Marshall mentioned the point, of course, that we have many times the Gemara uses the word 1/60th. The 1/60th is a tiny thing that's bottle, the whole concept of bottle, the shishim, for example. So therefore, so he takes a 1/60th. So Omalei, so the Amrilei, so they, the Chachamim, said to them, Achabachanina, Ihochi, if you're telling me that each person takes away 1/60th, so let 60 people come and visit, and they'll take away his entire illness. So he answers him, we don't mean 1/60th of what there was at the beginning. We mean ke'isuraisa debay rebi. First of all, it only means 1/60th of what's left each time, which is like the tenths that Rebbe talks about, which we learned back in Ksuvas. The Gemara is going to quote it again over here in a line, or in a few words. So each one takes one fraction of what was left. So the amounts they take get smaller and smaller. And second of all, it only applies, this taking away 1/60th only applies to Ben Giloy. In modern Hebrew, they use the word gil to mean age. And in fact, the Mefarish over here seems to say something along those lines, because it says ben gilo, you mean, for example, that if a sick person is young, then the visitor should be young, and then he has an effect on him, in the same way an old person. And the Meiri explains on that. He says, when we talk about taking away 1/60th of the illness, he says, because when somebody visits a sick person, the sick person enjoys his company, and therefore that itself takes away a certain percentage of his illness. With that said, the Ran over here, and then Rashi and other places in Shas, explains that Ben Giloy means somebody who's born under the same mazel as him. So that being the case, then you're not so easily going to find that many people who are born under the same mazel as him where it's going to be effective. So you're asking why you don't just have 60 people and visit. The reason is, first of all, because it's going to be hard to find 60 Ben Giloy, and second of all, even when they are, each of them takes away only 1/60th of what's left. What do we mean? What's Isaraisa de Bei Rebbe? D'Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, Bas HaNizonis Menichse Achin, we learned back in Ksubas that when a man dies and leaves over an estate, so his sons inherit it, as the Torah says, but they're responsible to support their sisters until their sisters become bogus or get married. And we talked about a case where each of them is entitled to a certain share of the nechassim for parnasa. Besides for mizonis to support themselves, they're also entitled, we learned, to take a certain percentage for parnasa, which is to pay for wedding expenses and things. So Rebbe Omer, Bas HaNizonis Menichse Achin, when you have a daughter who's being supported by the estate, by her brothers, and they tell us Isur Nechasim, so she gets 1/10 of the Nechasim that she can use for Parnasa. We learned over there on Ksuvas, really that's only a default. We would ordinarily see what the father's das is. Does he want to give more? Does he want to give less? What amounts did he give to previous daughters that got married, etc.? But Rebbe is saying that this 1/10 is kind of the default, if you don't know. Omruloi, so the other Chachamim said to Rebbe, L'dvarecha, according to your words, Mish yesh le'etzer bonus bain, if a person has 10 daughters and only one son, Ein lo leben b'makom bonus klum, are you telling me the son's not going to get anything because the daughters are each going to take 1/10 for parnasa? Omrulahen, and Rebbe explains to them, what I mean is, Rishonan atelas isu nechosim, the first one gets 1/10 of the nechosim to begin with, The second one gets from 10% of what the first one left over. So in other words, the first one is getting 10%, 10 out of 100. The second one is getting only 9%, is getting only 9% of the original, which is 10% of what's there now, 9 out of 90. So now there's 81 left. The third one is getting 8.1, etc. The third one is getting 1/10 of what was left over for her, so 8.1, and so it goes down. And then they go and divide it all evenly, because the Ran explains, we're talking about the scenario over here where all of them are ready to get married at once. So all of them, if not, then we say that each one is entitled to her share, and once it's gone, it's gone. Then the other daughters have no claim against the later daughters have no claim against the earlier ones. But when, suppose you have, now we're not necessarily talking 10 daughters, fine, let's say there are 3 daughters, whatever. The point is, if
they'll split across.
So that's the thing. What they do is, Rebbe is saying, you start by earmarking 10% for the first one, 10% of what's left, which is 9% of the original for the second one, 10% of what's left, which is 8.1%. For the third one, etc. Then, if this is happening all at once, then you take those amounts. Let's say now you've gone through 3 daughters. At this point, you've earmarked 27.1% of the nechassim. Now you go and split it evenly between all of them, and therefore each of them gets about 9%. You're taking that total amount that was earmarked for their parnasa and splitting it evenly so that each of them gets one third of it. Because again, if you had the first one was getting married and only later the second one is getting married, then we would say that not. Then we would say it's different. Once the first one has taken her parnasa, she's entitled to it, and that's that. She doesn't share it with her sisters. But now we're talking about they're all coming at once. So in other words, the point is we see that there's a scenario where we talk about one tenth, and we don't mean each one gets one tenth. We mean each one gets one tenth of what's left from the previous one. So the same way over here, when we talk about 1/60th over here, means the same kind of thing. 1/60th of what's left. Mathematically, it comes out, if you were to have 60 people, 60 Ben Gilo, visit a person like that, then it would come out, according to the figures. The Gemara is saying over here, it would come out the sick person would be left with somewhat more than one third of their sickness, about 35 or 36%. It comes out mathematically.
So if someone's like a needle and fusha, about 1,000 people.
So even 1,000 people, it still wouldn't. You're still going to have, there's still going to be a limit. Mathematically, you can calculate it. It requires higher mathematics, whatever, but it can be calculated that it would still come out the person is going to be left with around one third of their illness. So it'll do a lot of good. But you first have to find Ben Gila, I was saying over here.
Is that same age and the same mazel?
So we're saying, according to the Mefarish, Ben Gila means the same age. According to the Ran, it means the same mazel. And you also have, keep in mind as well, since based on the Gemara and Bava Metzia, it sounds like he actually takes some of the illness onto himself, you're going to have people who are willing to do that as well.
Yeah, it's in a small amount.
It's a small amount. They may not mind, but yeah. Fine. Continuing on dinim and agadis involving bikkurim. So the Gemara says, Reb Chelboy Cholash. One time, Reb Chelboy wasn't feeling well. Nafak Achris Reb Kahana. So Reb Kahana went out and made an announcement. Reb Chelboy Boish. Reb Chelboy is sick. Loi Ika Dokasi. But nobody was coming to be Mavaka Chola. Now, why not? So in fact, Iyun Yaakov, and Iyun Yaakov explains, since we just said that only Ben Giloy really helps to take away 1/60th, everybody figured we're not Ben Giloy or Reb Chelboy, why should we bother? Doesn't matter how old or whatever there was, age or mazel or whatever, they figured that, yeah. But Omelohu, but Reb Kahana tells them, never mind that, even if you can't take away 1/60th of the illness, there's another good in visiting him. Didn't it once happen with one of Reb Akiva's students who was sick? And the Chachamim did not come to visit him. The Nichnas Reb Akiva Levakroi. Reb Akiva came to visit him. Because they swept the floor and sprinkled water to lay down the dust, Choya, that made the student be able to live. So in other words, one explanation is that when Rabbi Akiva came in there, he saw the place is very dusty and dirty. So one explanation is Rabbi Akiva told his Talmidim to sweep and then mop and whatever. The other explanation is when the Talmidim themselves saw that Rabbi Akiva, their Rebbe, is there, they automatically started sweeping and mopping out of his cupboard. They weren't even considering the chola, but nevertheless, that made things much easier for the chola.
How would that help now in this case?
So one second. Omele Rebbe Hechisani. So he says, Rebbe, you've made me live, because now the place was so dusty and dirty before that, and now you've helped me live. Yotze Rav Akiva v'dorash, so Rav Akiva went out, back to the Beis Medrash, and Darshan, kol mi she'en mevaka cholim, kilo shofach damim. A person doesn't visit the sick, it's as if he's spilling blood, because you never know, there can always be something that needs to be looked after in that particular case, it was dusty and dirty. In other cases, it could be other kinds of things. But whatever it is, there's always, when you visit a sick person, you can always take a look and see what needs to be done, and that helps be mechayev. So therefore, in other words, Reb Kahana is telling the Chachamim, even if you don't think you can take away 1/60th of Reb Chelba's illness because you're not Ben Giloy, there are other things you can accomplish over there. So therefore, you should be doing that.
Making a tea.
Yeah, making a tea, for example, yeah. He also Rav Dini Omar. In fact, when Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, a person who visits a sick person helps him to live. And if he doesn't visit the sick person, he causes him to die. But the Gemara says, isn't that a very strong way of saying it? My grum, how exactly is he causing the person to die? You can't call that. Even if you say, for example, like in the story of Rabbi Akiva's Talmud, the place is dusty, fine, you need to come over there and clean it up. Doesn't mean that if you don't, you're causing the person to die. That's a very strong thing to say. So, So what do you mean by that? Ilema, do you mean kolam avakas, acholam avakas, olav rachim shiyichya? Do you mean that if a person visits a sick person, then when he's visiting, he will also daven for rachmanus that he should live? V'chol she'enem avakas acholam, mavakash olav rachim shiyomus. So you're going to say if he doesn't visit him, then it means he's going to daven for him that he would die. So what do you mean? Shiyomus sal kadai. What does that mean? Because just because he's not going to visit him, is he necessarily going to daven that the guy should die? Ella, rather, we can understand what Rav Dimi means is kol she'ein mevaku chola, when a person does not visit a sick person, ein mevaku shalav rachmim lo sheyichya v'lo sheyomus, because he doesn't see what's going on with him, he's not going to be davening for him that he should live, and also not that he should die. Now, what does that mean? So the Ran explains like this. We looked in Ksubas, we had at the end of Ksubas the story of Rebbe's passing, where we said that Rebbe was very sick and he was very uncomfortable, constantly having to go to the bathroom. We said the Chachamim were davening tremendously that Rebbe should continue to live. Meanwhile, Rebbe's maidservant, we said, realized how much suffering he's going through, so she davened to Hashem that the Yehi Ratzon, that the upper ones, the Malachim, should overcome the lower ones, the Talmid Chachamim down here, who are trying to keep Rebbe over here on earth. So therefore, in other words, the Ran says, we see from that Gemara that sometimes you can have a person who is in such a bad situation that the appropriate thing to do is to daven for him that he should die. So now what we're saying is, therefore, that you have a person visits, then he will see one way or the other. He'll see that the person is not so bad off and he'll daven for him to live, or he can see that he's really bad off and he'll daven for the opposite. So now like this, in other words, if he's not visiting at all, then he's not accomplishing either of those things. He's not giving him either kind of hana that he needs. So this becomes a very interesting and controversial point. Is that in fact allowed to daven for somebody, for somebody that he should die? What happened to, for example, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, in the story of Chizkiyahu, for example, that even if a sharp sword is on a person's neck, you should never give up hope that Hashem can have rachmanus on him. What happens to all kinds of things like that? First of all, Marsha says over here that Marsha says, as far as when the Gemara assumed that Rav Dimi is not just talking about sweeping and mopping, but he's talking about something more and deeper, because Rav Dimi just says, Gorda Moshe Yichya or Gorda Moshe Yomus, if Rav Dimi just meant that he'll sweep and mop for him, he would have said so, says Marsha. He says, Bedoichot, maybe you could say that. If Rav Dimi just meant that, he would have said, if you visit a sick person, you'll see what he needs in terms of sweeping or whatever, and you'll do it, and if you don't, then you won't. The fact that he's saying, Gorda Moshe Yichya, Gorda Moshe Yomus, seems to imply something stronger. Anyway, Marsha learns differently. He says, look, first the Gemara thought like this. If you visit a sick person, you must be his friend. So therefore, you're going to daven that he should live. If you don't visit him, then it means you must be his enemy. And then on the face of it, well, you're going to be davening that he's going to die. But the Gemara says, come on, I mean, even a person who hates him is not going to go so far as to daven that he's going to die. So rather, what he says is that no, what it means is if he doesn't visit the sick person, it does mean that why is he not visiting? Because he doesn't like him. Fine, he's not going to go so far as to daven that he should die, but he's not going to daven that he should live either. Otherwise, he would have davened for Rachman for him. And you never know, he might daven in an Ace Rotson, and therefore his tefillah should be accepted. So therefore, according to Marsha, it comes out that from Smara, you have no proof that you will ever allow to daven for a person to die. So now this whole point is not brought in Shulchan Aruch at all. It is brought in the Torah. What the Ran is saying over here is brought in the Torah, and the Nosi Kalim over there discuss it. The Mechaber did not bring it in Shulchan Aruch, and there is a good deal of discussion among Achronim. Does that mean that in practice we don't do it? No, pulling the plug is something else. Everybody agrees you for sure can't do a Maisa to cause the person to die, which is to pull the plug. The question is, can you do things like, for example, davening for him or doing other indirect things that will hasten his death? So there is a good deal of discussion about it among Achronim. Some of them say that b'chlal, we don't accept what the Ran is saying over here is halacha. The very fact that it's not brought in Shulchan Aruch implies that we can't do that. Rav Moshe talks about that maybe in theory, yes, but you would have to have some conditions. Among other things, you would have in the story of Rebbe, you have all the great chachamim of that time are davening for him, and it's not helping. And his maidservant realized that, and realized in that case we have to do something drastic. Yes. Right. So on the other hand, though, in a regular case where you don't have all the great tzaddikim having been davening for the person to live, so how can you be davening that he should? How could you be davening that he should die? Maybe instead go find a tzaddik to daven for him that he should live. Also, you would have to have, of course, that you do know that it's incurable. And can you know that? You never know. In Mice and B'chol Yom, that you have people who were thought to be incurable, and they're revived, and they're alive and healthy for years afterwards. So even though in theory, he says, in theory, so maybe if you're a great tzaddik, and you know that your tefillos are being accepted in Shemayim, then maybe it would be appropriate to do what the Ran is saying over here, but not in a normal situation. Normally, you just daven that the person should live and be healthy, and you don't mix into Hashem's business. So according to the Ran, what we're saying is, if you visit, then you'll daven that he'll live, and if not, then you'll daven that he'll die, as the case may be. Whatever you'll see is more appropriate. According to Marusha, the vote is that if you visit, you show that you're his friend, and you'll daven for him. If you don't visit, it shows that you're his enemy, and then you're not even helping him out by davening. Where you might have davened, and you'll happen to daven in Eis Ratzon, and your tefillah will be accepted.
But the other half of the statement doesn't seem to be.
So that's the thing. According to the Ran, we're saying there is. Means that there would have been times when it's appropriate to daven for his death. Whereas according to Marusha and most everybody else, it means just that practically speaking, he's not davening for him at all. So it's not helping him to live. It's not killing him either, but it's not helping him to live. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. Rava yoyma kadma decholish when Rava would be sick. Well, on the first day, Omalahon, he would tell the members of his family, loy tigula inish, don't inform anybody. Don't start making announcements that I'm sick. Deloy litra mazolai. Because I don't want my mazol to be wound. Like this, for example, I might recover very quickly. So when you say that somebody is sick, that itself, when you say anything, it has a major influence on how things actually happen in this world. We have a story with the Baal Shem Tov, and I'll tear you up like a fish. You have all kinds of things like that. So when you say that he's sick, that itself has a certain effect on him. The Rosh refers in this connection to a Gemara in Shabbos that uses a popular expression. Once the ox has fallen down, you start sharpening the knife. In other words, once he's down already, then he's in much greater danger. So in other words, once it's known that Rava is down and is sick, that automatically, the fact that it's known, puts him in much greater danger. So the first day, don't do that. Mikan ve'elach, the days after that, Omalahon, he would tell, if he's sick for more than one day, he would tell the members of his household, Puku v'achrizu b'shuka, go ahead, announce it in the marketplace that Rava is sick. They're called the sunny le'lichti. On the contrary, what it'll accomplish is, anybody who doesn't like me will be happy that I'm sick. After all, the Pasuk says, it's quoted in Pirkei Avos, that when your enemy has fallen, don't be happy, because the Pasuk says, Hashem will see, and it'll be bad in his eyes that the other person is doing that. The Heshiv may all of Atta, and it'll turn away his anger from him. So in other words, Rava is saying the very fact that somebody else is happy at my disaster may help that Hashem, because of that alone, Hashem will have Rachmanus on me. And anybody who likes me, Liboy Alai Rachmi, will know that I'm sick, and that way he'll be able to daven on my behalf. So in fact, the Rambam brings that Bechlal, during the first couple of days, generally speaking, or I think we're going to have it later in the Gemara, actually, that generally speaking, during the first couple of days, only the relatives should be visiting him. Only after a couple of days have passed should other people start visiting as well. On the other hand, he says that if kofatz olav achodi, if it's like a sudden illness, then people can start visiting right away. So that may be based on this over here that we're saying if it's something that developed gradually, so you don't want to start publicizing it in full view of everybody right away. Omar Rav. So Rav says further about Bikur Cholim, Kolam Avakar Sachola, anybody who visits a sick person, Nitzo Medina Shal Gehenim. The source of that is he will be saved from the judgment of Gehenim. Shenema, the Pasuk says, Ashrei Maskil El Dol, happy is the person, happy, fortunate is the person who is wise about the poor person. The yom, we're going to explain in a second that the poor person means a sick person. The yom ra yimalteu Hashem. Hashem will save him, the one who is maskil al dol, on the day of evil. So ein dal el chola. So in this pasuk, the word dal means only a sick person. Ma'asha explains, because if it just meant a poor person, you don't have to be that masculine, you don't have to be that wise to figure out how to help a poor person. You give them money, and then that's that. Yeah. On the other hand, with a poor person, you have to be masculine, you have to look around, like we said before, look and see what exactly he needs, and then do that for him, like we saw. Rabbi Akiva looked around in his Talmud's room and saw what's going on, so therefore that can be described with the word masculine. And we know the word dal can mean sick. Shenema midalo yavas eini. You find in Chizkiyahu's tefillah after he recovered from his dangerous illness. So he says the word midalo yavas eini. Midalo from sickness yavas eini. He would cut me off. In other words, that he's saying, I thought that I was going to be cut off and I'm going to die from this sickness. So we see that the word dalo means sick. Inami min hoden kra, or another source you can show from the following pasuk. In the story of Amnon and Tamar, when Amnon has a taiva for his sister Tamar, they're biological half siblings, biologically, but lahalacha they're not considered siblings because she was the daughter, they have the same father, but she was born from a yifas toyar and she was a geodas, and therefore she's not considered halachically related to Amnon. You have the whole story over there where Amnon has a taiva for her and lures her to his room, etc. Anyway, so he was feeling very sick over her. So his friend, who was actually his cousin, Yonadav, a nephew of David, says to him, Madua atakocha dal ben hamelach baboker, why are you, son of the king, why are you so dal every morning? And dal means sick. So he's asking him, why do you look so sick? And Avshalom, Amnon tells him what's going on, and this Yonadav gives him, this Yonadav gives him an advice what to do, how to lure Tamar to him. Yeah, well, so actually, yeah, the pasuk calls Yonadav Chacham, and Rashi brings from a Gemara, that means Chacham L'ra'a, it means it was a Chacham to do evil. With that said, actually, the Malbim on the pasuk softens it a little bit. He says that Yonadav thought that maybe, okay, you know what, if he sees Tamar, if she comes in person and makes him some food, maybe that'll be enough that'll satisfy his Yetzirah enough, which in that case, it was still careless of Yonadav to do that, but anyway. The point is that he used the word dal, dal usually means poor, but you can't say to a king's son you look poor every morning. It means you look sick every morning. So we see again that the word dal means poor. It means sick, yeah. So, ashe maskil adol, that means happy, fortunate is the person who is understanding what to do for the dal, for the sick person. And the pasuk continues, v'yoyim ro yimalteu Hashem, on the day of evil Hashem will save him. So what do we mean by evil? V'ein ro el gehen. The word ro in our pasuk means gehen. Shenema, as the pasuk says, kol pal Hashem l'maneu, everything Hashem made for his purposes, v'gam rosha l'yoyim ro, also the Rosha for the day of evil. So we actually had this pasuk earlier in the Masechta as well, and Maharsha explained over there that what it means is the fact that Hashem created Gehenim and punishes the Rishoyim in it, that itself makes Hashem's name greater in the world, that we realize that the Rishoyim get their punishment. So therefore, so Hashem created, not that Hashem created that any particular person has to be a Rosha. We know Tzadik Rosha like Karma, but Hashem created the concept that the Rosha is going to be punished in the Ra of Gehenim, and that is part of the greatness of Hashem. With that said, the Alter Rebbe and Tanya puts a different spin on the pasuk. He says that it means that when the Rosha does tshuva, then it means that the Rosha was created for the purpose of being able to do tshuva, and that is also Paul Hashem Amaneu, that it means it's part of what Hashem did for his purposes, that it makes his name greater in the world. But here, the Gemara is understanding that the word Ra means not the evil that the Rosha did, but rather the Gehenim that he suffers as a result of it. So we see that Ra means Gehenim. So therefore, so in short, now the pasuk Ashe Maskel Adol, the Yom Ra, Yomatei Hashem, means that when the person takes care of the dal of the poor person, then Hashem saves him on the day of evil, meaning Hashem saves him from Gehenna. So then the Gemara continues, the Imbiker Maskel, right? So now if he does visit a sick person, what's his schar? When I say, what do you mean, maskari? Kudama, we just said, Nitzel Medinesh or Gehenim. He gets saved from the judgment of Gehenim. You need a bigger schar than that. Ela maskari ba'olam hazeh. Rather, the Gemara says, the question is, what's his schar in this world? And Maharsha explains, given that he saved the sick person's life in this world, like we said before, we should expect that he gets a schar in this world. So therefore, what is that schar? So the answer is, look at the following pasuk in Tehillim after Asher Maskel Adol. The next pasuk continues, Hashem Yishmerehu V'Chayehu. Hashem will watch him and make him alive. V'ushar Ba'aretz, and he will be fortunate in the land, in the world. V'al Titneu B'Nefesh Oivav, and don't give him over to the desires of his enemy. So let's explain that phrase by phrase. Hashem Yishmerehu, when it says Hashem will guard him, means Mi'etzahara, that Hashem will give him extra help to overcome his Yetzahara. V'chayehu mina Yisurim, when it says that he will make him alive, means that he won't suffer Yisurim. V'usha ba'aretz, then when it says he'll be fortunate in the world, means Sheyir akol miskabdin bay, everybody will consider themselves honored to have to do with him. And when it says, don't give him over to the nefesh, now the word nefesh can mean the desire, but it can also mean literally the soul of his enemies. That means she is that he should have the schus to have good friends like Naaman, who healed his tzaras. So we have the story in Malachim, it's the Haftarah of Parshas Tazria, where Naaman, an Arami general, was suffering from tzaras. So he goes, he goes to Elisha to cure him. He goes to Elisha to cure him, and Elisha tells him, Elisha doesn't come out, he sends a messenger to tell him, go dip 7 times in the Yarden, and Naaman is ready to just leave in a huff. I thought that the Navi is going to come out and wave his hand over it, etc. What do I need him to tell me to dip in a river? There's plenty of rivers near Damascus, etc. Then his servants tell him, you know what? What do you have to lose? You came all this way. You would have done any big thing, even that the Navi told you. What do you have to lose by doing what he says? And sure enough, he dips in the Yarden and is cured. So now we're saying that a person should have the schus to have good friends like that, that lead him in the right way. Rather, imagine if Naaman had advisors who tell him, you know what, you're right. What are you bothering for? Then he would have remained with his tzaras. So actually the Mefarish printed under Rashi's name gives a different explanation, that the Reim, the friends over here, means actually Elisha. And it means the very fact that Elisha told him to dip in the Yarden, where if not for that, he would have been stuck. Then that's considered his reim. On the other hand, other Mephoshim say, I mean, come on, you're going to call Elisha friend of Naaman, Elisha the Navi versus Naaman the Goy. So the point is, Al Titneu Nefesh Oivav means that we're saying that a person who visits a sick person will have the schus, that now he will have, his friends will be good friends who help him, but Al Yizdam Goloi Reim Terechavam Shechil Kuros Malchusei, rather than he's going to end up having friends like Rechavam who ended up causing his kingdom to get split. So you have the story earlier in Malachim, where Rechavam, Shlomo's son, is about to become the new king of the 12 Shvatim, of all 12 Shvatim, just like his father Shlomo was. And they tell him the taxes and the hard labor and everything, we're very hard under Shlomo, can you go easier on us? So what happens? The Pasuk says, he goes and he consults with his older advisors, and they tell him, talk nicely to them, tell them that you'll do what they want, and they'll listen to you. On the other hand, then he goes to the younger advisors, and they tell them, no, on the contrary, show them who's boss. Show them that I'm going to charge you more. I'm going to be even greater than my father. And he does that. He ignores the elder's advice. He goes for the younger advice, for the younger one's advice. And 10 of the Shvatim say, we don't want to bother with him. And they secede and form their own kingdom. So if Rechavim had better friends, better advisors, then he wouldn't have done that. So therefore, we're saying that's the schus that a person has for visiting the sick, is he ends up with good advisors who help him, like Naaman, rather than bad advisors that are to his detriment, like Rechavim.
By visiting the sick, you get good
advice. That's what we're saying. You have a number of things. There's a whole pasuk in Tehillim that we said. So,
you can't come in the middle and explain.
So, Marshall explains that each of these things is mida keneged mida. He helped keep the sick person alive. So therefore, Sasha and the Gemara explains later on that when a person is healed from a serious illness, it means that Hashem forgave him for his averus. Therefore, mida keneged mida, the person who visited him and helped that happen is also helped to be free from his yetzahara. Then he helped the other person not die with Yisurim. Therefore, he himself has the source that he won't suffer Yisurim in the future. He went and set his own dignity aside to sweep and mop and do whatever for the poor person. Therefore, other people will consider themselves honored to associate with him. That's the Mahakom Skabdin. And we said The last one is, so for Marsha says the word benefesh suggests rotzen. The word nefesh means the desire. So what does it mean? He won't be given over to the desire of his enemies. Meaning, in other words, you're talking about friends that have desires, want to do one thing or another. He'll end up with the ones who give him advice that's to his benefit. And the point is, again, midah keneged midah. Marsha says, we said before that even a greater person has to visit a lesser person. So midah keneged midah, therefore he gets. So he acted as a good friend by saying it's not beneath my dignity to visit you, even though you're not quite of my caliber. Midah keneged midah, then Hashem arranges that he has good friends who will give him good advice rather than the other way around. So now, in connection with this, in connection with the Rechavim as an advisor, the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Alaza Omer, Im Yomer L'cho Yolodim Bnei, Skenim Stir. If young people tell you build and old people tell you tear down, shmalas kainim val tishmala yolodim. Listen to the elders, don't listen to the young ones. Shebinyan yolodim skira, because the building of the young ones is really a destruction. Ustira kainim binyan, and vice versa. When the old ones are telling you to tear down, that really is how you build. The similar dover, Rechavim and Shlomer. You see with Rechavim, his elder advisors are telling him on the face of it to tear down his kingship. Act nicely to them, and they will be, but that would have been a binyan, that would have kept his kingship intact. On the other hand, the young ones are saying, show that you're the tough guy, that you plan to be a greater king than Shlomo, and therefore they will have to listen to you, and the result of it was a stira, the result was that 10 and 12 Shvatim seceded. The Mefarish brings over here that ultimately also, the hundreds of years later, the result was the Beis Mikdash was destroyed because after the Ten Shvatim went into Galus, after the Ten Shvatim seceded, first they started worshipping Avodah Zarah and were taken into Galus. Later on, Yehuda and Binyamin learned from them and also got embedded, enmeshed in Avodah Zarah and the Churban. So it all happened as an outgrowth hundreds of years later of the secession that began in Rechavim's times.
They were far away,
but in other words, there was a historical process that began with the secession of the Ten Shvatim, which ended up almost 400 years later with the destruction of the Beis Mikdash. So therefore, in other words, this advice of the young ones that caused the Ten Shvatim to split off on their own, that had long-term effects even hundreds of years later, we're saying. That ultimately brought about that Yerovim is in a position to get the people to worship Avodah Zarah, and eventually one thing led to another.
That's when Eglazov began.
Maharsha mentions over here the mushal, the mushal the Gemara is using in. Imagine you have a building and you want to build another floor on top of the building. So the old people might tell you, you know what, the walls of the existing building are not strong enough to hold another story on top of them. Tear down the walls first, build them more strongly, then you'll have the strength to have another floor on top of it. On the other hand, the young ones may say, forget about that. You want to build another one, just build another one. Well, what's going to happen? You're going to end up with a collapsed building. So therefore, that's the metaphor. In other words, that even though the young people on the face of it are telling you to build without first destroying, but the old people have better advice. They tell you that you need to be soyser amanasal advice.
So
you have to destroy in order to build. Yeah. Okay. Getting back now to Bikur Cholim. Amud of Shisha Bred Rabbi. Loy lisud enish ksira, a person should not visit a sick person lisud, or there's different yosaris over here, lisoid. Lisoid would literally mean to support. The word soyed means to support. The sadu libcham literally means, right, so literally the sadu libcham means support your heart, in other words, by eating. So one explanation is it means to support. The other girsa is loy lisur, which would actually be the Aramaic word for visiting. When we learned yesterday that there's a pasuk of Kudas Tola Adam in connection with Korach, so Targum actually translates it. Targum Onkelos actually translates it Usiuras Tola Adam or something like that. So
there's a Dalit.
So right, so it can be with a Dalit or with a Reish, different stars. Anyway, so you shouldn't visit Sira, a sick person, Loi B'Tlas Shoy Kadmaisa, Loi B'Tlas Shoy Basraisa B'Yoma, not during the first 3 hours of the day and not during the last 3 hours. That way, the person who's visiting will not be dissuaded from davening for rachmanus for the sick person. Now, what's the problem visiting during those hours? During the first 3 hours, during the first 3 hours of the day, the sick person looks like he feels much better. So then you visit him at that time. You're likely to think, oh, he's so much better. I don't need to doubt for him anymore. And during the last 3 hours of the day, on the contrary, he looks much sicker. Then you're likely to say, forget about it. It's impossible that he's gonna survive. So therefore, I might as well not daven for him. Even the Ran, or even what we said before about the Ran, about maybe even davening that he has so much yisurim that he should die, whatever. So therefore, better to visit him in the middle of the day when his sickness is average. So then you'll realize that he's seriously sick and daven for him, but not so much that you're gonna give up hope on him. The Rambam, by the way, actually gives a different explanation of it. He says that practically speaking, during the first three and the last hours and the last 3 hours of the day, people are doing things for the sick person, and therefore you're more likely to get in the way. As opposed to in the middle of the day, there are going to be fewer people around taking care of the sick person, therefore you're not going to be in the way. Therefore, the early, late morning or the afternoon, so then your company will be more welcome.
It's quiet time, so that's the most
important. Yes. Okay. Omar Robin Omar Rab. Minayin Shakurish Bohu Zona Sachola. How do we know that Hashem sustains a sick person? Now, you often have a person that's so sick that they can't eat. But nevertheless, we still see the person stays alive. So it means Hashem is sustaining him. It means, in other words, the person is basically living off their body's reserves. But in other words, we find the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin and in other places that a person, to a certain extent, a person has a fever, and we're talking about over here a person is sick, or often that would include a fever, then the fever itself helps sustain him. Like that itself makes that he's able to use his body's reserves more effectively. So how do we know that Hashem arranges that? Shenemar, the Pasuk says, this is a continuation of Kapitel Mem Aleph, we quoted before the Pesukim, Ashe Maskel Odol, and Hashem Yishmereu Vechayehu. So another Pasuk in that Kapitel says, Hashem Yisodenu Al Eres Devoy V'Gam, Hashem will support him on his bed of pain. So we see, in other words, that Hashem supports him by making it possible for him to live even though he's not eating. The Omer Robin Omer Rav, Minayin Shashchina Shruya L'mayla Mimitosa Shalchola. How do we know that the Shechina rests above a sick person's bed? Shenema, the same pasuk, Hashem Yisodenu, Al Eres Devoy, Hashem supports him on his bed of pain. So Hashem is supporting him and also we just said before the word Lis'oid or Lis'ur can mean to visit a person. Shashem Yisodenu, Hashem visits him, Al Eres Devoy, when he's on his bed of pain, when he's sick.
What's Lis Mayakir, when he's... When his children come to, says the Shekhinah rests.
So by Ishtachu he saw Al Rosh Hamita, it says he bowed by the head of the bed. But there you could say that maybe it's specific to Yaakov, that the Shekhinah is by the head of his bed. But you were saying that in general, any sick person, the Shekhinah is by the head of his bed. Tani Namihochi. In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. Hanichnas Levakar Sachola. When you come to visit a sick person, Lo Yeshiv, Lo Yagabe Mitav, Lo Yagabe Safsov, Lo Yagabe Kisei. You shouldn't sit on a bed or a bench or a chair, elamis atif, rather you wrap yourself up out of respect for the Shechina, that you don't just sit over there bareheaded, the Yoshua Gabi Karka, and you sit on the floor, because the Shechina is resting above the sick person's bed. So in other words, it wouldn't be respectful to sit higher than the Shechina. With that said, though, the Ran brings an opinion that says that would only be if the sick person himself is lying on the ground or on a cot on the ground or something. But if the sick person is lying in a bed, which is off the ground, then there's no problem. And that is, in fact, the halacha, as brought in Shulchan Aruch, which is why, Maisim L'chol Yom, you go visit people in the hospital, you don't have to sit on the floor, you sit on a chair. No, you can stand if you want. But
you're standing okay. That's right.
Standing is fine, but we learned in the Mishnah, actually, that if a person's Mudr Hana, the reason why this is in Masechta Nedarim is because we started talking about a person has a neder, is under a neder, not to have Hana from the other person, we still say the other person is allowed to visit him, but he's only allowed to stand, right? But in any case, the point is, yes, you could stand, but you could sit if you want, and you're allowed to sit on a chair or a bench or what have you, because since the sick person himself is off the floor anyway, so you're not sitting higher than the Shechina, so it's fine. By the way, another practical halacha that comes out of that the Shechina is by a sick person's bed, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, is you allow, when you're davening for a sick person, in general, you should daven in Lashon Kodesh, because the malachim, it says, don't understand Aramaic, or they don't consider it an important language, and therefore they're not going to bring your tefillah to Hashem. But if you're davening where the sick person is present, then you can daven in Aramaic or any other language, because then you don't need the malachim to bring your tefillah to Hashem. The Shechina is right there.
So you're
davening
in English or Hebrew?
Yeah, in English and in any language. Okay. Yeah. So now the Gemara is going to digress from matters of Bikkur Cholim to another topic. This is one of those things where often we have the Gemara has brought one statement from an Amora in the name of another Amora, and then the Gemara digresses to mention similar things. Since we just had a couple of things that Rovin said in the name of Rav regarding a sick person, so now the Gemara brings another one that has nothing to do with sick people. The Omar Rovin Omar Rav Mitra b'ma'arava, when there is rain in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Sahadar Rav Pras, the great witness for that is the river Pras. Because what happens is, the Pras is on the border between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So even though we in Babel, Rav is saying, we live in Babel, we don't see any rain having fallen. All of a sudden, though, we see that the Pras River is much larger than normal. The reason is because it rained in Eretz Yisrael, and it ran, and the runoff went into Nahar Pras. Actually, Rashi and Tosfos discussed that in other places in Shas. Does it mean that the Pras actually flows from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, or does it mean Tosfos says the other way around, it flows from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, but when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, the river is so swollen that it backs up, like the current of it backs up because there's so much. The point is, the Ran says, the nafkamina of it is, now we know like this, we have to talk a little bit about certain dinim of mikveh. We know the Torah tells us you have to dip in a mikveh for any kind of tumah. Now, there are two basic kinds of mikveh. There's a mikveh and there's a mayan. A mayan is a spring, and the din is that you're allowed to tovel on a spring even if the water is flowing, even if the water is running and moving from one place to another. For example, you go to the Arizal mikveh in Tzfas, it's fed by a spring, the water is constantly in motion, but you can tovel on it. On the other hand, a mikveh, which is made out of water, out of rainwater or what have you, that has to be collected in one place. A mikveh has to be collected, the water has to be collected in one place. If it's flowing, you can't tovel on it. This is why they have in the mikvahs, they have the whole thing with the filters, whatever, anyway. So now what happens is, if you want to tovel in the Pras River at a time when it's larger than normal, the problem is that now you have the water is a mixture of spring water, which comes from the sources, from the springs that feed the river Pras, but it's now mixed together with rainwater, because we're saying that you have rainwater from Eretz Yisrael that flowed into it. And now the result is you wouldn't be able to tovel in it when it's flowing.
Even if most of it is
spring water, you always have the concern, the Ram says, that you might have more megashamim than you may have more zeichelin than notvin. You may have more water that's flowing from the rainwater more than the spring water that makes up the original of the river.
So what can you do?
Therefore, you'd have to, we'll talk about soon. You could, for example, set up mats or walls or something to block off part of the river so you could tovel on it. You could dig a trench to bring water into there from the river and then tovel there, whatever. You have possibility. You could build a mikveh, but whatever. The point is you can't tovel in the actual river. That's right. That doesn't count, right. So the Ram says, if the river is flowing slowly, or it's only a little larger than normal, then you say for sure most of it consists of the spring water that feeds the river, then it would be fine. However, the Gemara says, "Pliger de Shmuel." Now what Rav is saying though disagrees with Shmuel. The Amar Shmuel nara mikefe misperich. Shmuel says that no, when you see a river is larger than normal, it's actually getting an extra flow from the underground springs that feed it. Kefe literally means it's rocks. So you have the springs that are among rocks in the ground. Mikefe, or Nara, a river, Mikefe, from its rocks, meaning from the rocks from which the, from between which the springs that feed the river come out, Misbarech is blessed. In other words, that it's getting larger because the underground aquifers, the underground sources of water that are feeding it are becoming bigger. And in fact, the Ram says, now practically speaking, Shmuel agrees, of course, that we see that when it's raining, the river is bigger. But he says, there's a Gemara in Tainus that says that whenever there's rain falling from Shemayim, you always have the Mei Tahoim, the underground water, rises up. So you have a Tefach, the rain will penetrate a Tefach into the ground. Meanwhile, the underground springs will rise up to Tefachim to meet it. So in other words, in Chassidish terms, in other words, a small amount of the Sarusa Bela'elah brings a much greater Sarusa Bela'elah. So even when you have, there's rain falling, but you have a much smaller saying, you have a much larger flow of water that's coming from underground and helping to swell the river. Therefore, according to him, there would be no problem toveling in the river during the rainy season because it's always going to be more. It's always going to be more spring water. It's always going to be more spring water than rainwater. But the Gemara says, however, what Shmuel said as far as that is actually disagreeing with another statement that he himself said, which doesn't mean, of course, it doesn't mean he's contradicting himself. It can mean that as a matter of practical halacha, he's not accepting this. He's not saying we can rely on this Nadam and Kekim spirit. But practical halacha, we have to consider. He said, Dama Shmuel, Eina Mayim Tarin Bezuchlin Ela Pros. The only time that you can tovel in flowing water is zochel, means flowing water, is only the river Pros, which the Ram says we don't mean specifically the river Pros, we mean other rivers that are like it. Maybe Yarden, maybe, yeah. One second. Over Yoyme Tishrei Bilvad, and only during the time of Tishrei. Because Tishrei time is not yet the rainy season, and now it's Yisrael and Bavel, it only starts raining after Tishrei. It's also not the snow melt season earlier on in the season. It's not raining during the summer, and now it's Yisrael and Bavel. But you have the snow is melting in the mountains that where the sources of the Pros or whatever river are from. And therefore, you have, again, that some of the water there, or maybe even most of the water, is going to be from that melting snow, which, again, is not May Mayan. It's not spring water. It's rain water, ultimately. And therefore, it has to be in one place. So therefore, only the Pros and other similar rivers, and only Tishrei time would you be able to tovel on a river, but other times not, because either you're going to have other times of the year, either the river is going to have snow melt in it, and then you can't use Zeuchlin, or it's going to have rain water in it, and again, you have the same problem. So only that. So the Ran has a long explanation over here where he says that one point that Shmuel is making is that it has to be, in other words, one thing about Pros and certain other rivers, they never stop flowing. Now you have what I call in the Mishnah, Mayim HaMachazvim. Sometimes you have seasonal rivers or seasonal streams. After a rainfall, they'll run for a while and then afterwards they'll dry up. You have such things all over Eretz Yisrael. They call them wadis. They have them out in the western states over here. You have in some of the canyons over there tend to have seasonal streams in them or whatever. So those kind, the Ran says, Shmuel is saying, you can't tovel in those when they're flowing ever because necessarily any of the water that's in them is from rain. Because they only flow for a while after a rainfall. Only when you have the Pros, which is a permanent river that flows 365 days a year, regardless of the season, then you can say that you can tovel in it, but even then it would only have to be Tishrei time, because then you can be sure that there's no rainwater or snow melt or whatever in it. So Nissan would be a problem, because that's the end of the rainy season. So there's either rain in it, or there's snow that's starting to melt into it. And then you have the problem, again, that you might have more zeuchelin than neutrin. You might have more flowing water from rain, more than the spring water that originally feeds the river.
Didn't we say, too, we have the time as doubles? When
so that's according to Shmuel. That's what we're saying. Shmuel is saying, even though in principle he says that, but in practice he doesn't want us to rely on it in halacha. Now, the Ran does say that it doesn't have to be Tishrei time. If a person is familiar with a particular river, and he knows, he can see that the river right now is no larger than it normally is other times of the year, then fine, he could tovel in it other times. We're just saying typically Tishrei would be the one time that we could be sure of that. But if a person is familiar with the river systems of his area, then yes, in principle he could.
But Nissan, there's no rain.
That's the point. In other words, no, that's the point.
There's no way, it's okay.
One second. But you still have snow melt. Nissan you have is the end of the rainy season. So first of all, there is sometimes rain, but second of all, you also have that snow in the higher elevations is starting to melt and add to the stream. In fact, you often have that rivers are bigger in Nissan. For example, the Pasuk mentions when the Jewish people crossed the Yarden to come into Eretz Yisrael that the river was much bigger than normal, and it was Yud Nissan. So yeah.
Okay.
So the Gemara finishes off in this connection. Avur de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, who we know was a famous. Interesting. Okay, wow. So here in a sicha that's in this week's Vrah Malchus in connection with Tess Kislev, the birthday and the yod site of the Mitzvah Rebbe. Yes, yeah, so the Rebbe points out this line that Nara Mekifa Nisbeth, that what we're saying over here, that a river is increased by its underground springs, and you have in the same way the Mitzvah Rebbe brought out a tremendous increase in Achotas Achsidus more than the Alter Rebbe. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Avur de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, who we know was one of the great Rabbonim in Babel in his times. So he was responsible for things of practical halacha. Ovid Lahain Mikvois for Bnase, he would make Mikvois for his daughters, Biyoim and Nissen, during the Nissen time. So in other words, Nissen time, again, he's saying you can't toil, and not just from Nissen, but not just in Nissen, but the Ram learns, it means from Nissen until Tishrei, any time during that time, they have to toivel. They can't toivel in the river, because like we're saying, the problem is the river is going to have snow melt in it, and you never know, there may be too much snow melt in it, and you can't toivel in it. So therefore, instead, he would make mikvois for them, actual mikvois, where the water was kept in one place, and therefore you can toivel in them. On the other hand, umakti b'nei Tishrei, then he would make for the mats during Tishrei time. So what were the mats for? So the Ran brings a couple of possibilities. One is it can mean he would put mats on the bed of the river so they can stand on them when they tovel. Because now, at that point, Tishrei time, they can tovel on the river. However, there's the problem that mud may stick to their feet and it'll be a chatzitza. So he would arrange to have mats put down there ahead of time. That way they can stand on the mats and they won't get mud on their feet. The other explanation is he used the mats to make a partition around them so they can tovel with tzniyos, because otherwise the din is you can't tovel in a place where people might pass by, because she may be too quick, she may be embarrassed, and she's going to tovel too quickly and not make sure that she's in the proper posture to tovel. So therefore, you have to have something set up over there for tzniyos. So the Ran goes on to say that if it's only Tishrei time that they could tovel over there, then why does he use the expression B'yom Nissen or B'yom Tishrei? It should say that the whole year round you would make mikvos for them except for Tishrei. So the Ran says that no, what it means is that during the winter time anyway, they wouldn't tovel in the river, it would be too cold. So they tovel in mikvos in their houses. So therefore during the winter time we don't have to talk about. Nissen, when it starts getting warmer, then they would start toveling in the rivers. And then he would arrange for them, he would build for them a mikveh right there by the river. In other words, he'd dig a channel to make a mikveh where they were near the river, and they could tovel in them from Nissen until Tishrei.
They had mikvehs in their houses.
They could. Yeah, why not? It's possible to build a mikveh in your house.
In Russia, I guess.
And by the way, they weren't living in Russia, they were living in Babel.
They built mikvehs in their houses.
Yeah, could be. Then in Tishrei, again, they don't need the mikvahs anymore, because at that point there's no rain or snow melt in the river, so now they can tovel in the actual river, so now he would set up the mats for them. And then after Tishrei, it's starting to get cold again, then they'd go back to toveling in their houses, and they'd repeat that cycle every year.
Get to a lot of water.
Now, so the Ran goes into a discussion over here. Ultimately, then, we have two opinions over here. We have Rav's opinion, and we're saying what Avor de Shmuel did, and what Shmuel himself maybe holds in practice, that you can only tovel in a river certain times of year. Then on the other hand, we have Shmuel's Nader Miketa Nisprich, that the river is always larger because of its subterranean springs. So what is the halacha? So the Ran goes into a long discussion over here what the halacha would be like. First, he says that Rabbi Tam passed him at Shmuel, so therefore you could tovel in a river any time during the year. You never have to worry about rainwater or snow melt or whatever.
Wow.
One second, that's where Rabbi Tam holds that. On the other hand, though, the Ran says that even Rabbi Tam, again, would only say that about rivers that flow all year round. Even he would agree that these temporary wadis and whatnot wouldn't count, because those for sure are from rainwater. On the other hand, then he goes on to say that Rabbi Hanano and the Rif learn, they passed him like Rav and like Avor de Shmuel. So then, and he explained that Ramban brings a reason for it, because even though Shmuel said something differently, we see that's only a statement of Agadda, and you can't learn Halacha from Agadda. So therefore, they end up saying that therefore indeed there would be rules. You can't necessarily tovel in a river any time when there's a problem, when there might be rainwater or snow melt in it. So in practice, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that in a pinch, if you really have no other alternative, then you can tovel in a river. But even then, what you do, the Ran goes on to discuss, that maybe at least what you would have to do is you'd have to tovel in the part of the river which you know is there all year round. In other words, there's a part of the river which you know is in that place all year round. Then you have the parts where it gets bigger and then flows over its banks. So those parts, you have to be concerned is rainwater. The middle of the river, maybe you can get away with toveling in a pinch. But even then, better not to, and better, this is why all over the world they have mitzvah, includes building actual mikvahs all over the world in order to avoid that problem, so you don't have to tovel in rivers or lakes or things like that, where there can always be questions about whether it's a valid tzivah.
Sure, of course, thank you.